All right, welcome back to Hash Rate Up. Today I am interviewing Steve Barber. We are talking current market, AI pivots, how energy companies are buying equipment from him to mine Bitcoin. Are oil and gas companies already Bitcoiners? Find out in this episode. Also, find out what VFDs are. Stay tuned. Hash Rate Up. Hardware sales, advisory, hosting, and site brokerage. Find new and used ASIC deals through the website and the Telegram channel below. Make smarter decisions with Hashrate Up. All right. So like I said in the introduction, I'm back this week with Mr. Steven Barber. Hello, Steven. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, Jesse.
100%. It's been a long time coming. I know we met at a bar, which we vaguely remember in Vegas one time. And so I'm glad that we finally get to do this. Before we get started, we are at 943261 and we are currently 75 blocks too fast. So the previous adjustment 7.76 and we're looking to reverse that a little bit now. And hash price is still sitting at just about 30. How important is hash price to you, Steve? And what do you think about the market right now with all of this pivoting to A and I?
Well, I don't like when the blocks are fast. I can put it that way. Yeah, I mean, just like any mining infrastructure company, the hash price is, you know, that reflects the sentiment in the mining market. You know, if it's trending down, sentiment is bearish and negative. And if it's trending up, it's the opposite. So usually we slow down on sales and inquiries, right, as you'd expect. But it's usually when it's trending down, like if it's been flat for a while and things have consolidated a little bit, and then people sort of have an idea of where maybe, you know, where they're projecting the hash price floor to be, then the inquiries start ramping up again. It's often the uncertainty period, right? Like when things are not so sure. So
I mean, that doesn't last so long, right? I mean, the ride down has not been that long. I feel like we've been sideways for a bit now, and the rush down came quite fast. What do you expect for what do you expect for hash price? And is hash price more important to your business and doing what you do, or is it Bitcoin price still?
Definitely hash price. But I mean, like, you know, when Bitcoin price starts, say, pumping like it was at the, what was it, end of 2024 and into 2025, the Bitcoin price is what gets people generally that might not be in the market, like, to look at the market, and that drives a lot of the inquiries. Of course, you know, Bitcoin price going up tends to correlate with the hash price going up if it's outpacing difficulty. So the price, definitely, like, the actual coin price is a big factor, like the direction it's trending, like if it's on the upswing or downswing. At least for as our company, you know, how I have the company set up, we sort of straddle two markets. You know, like we've done plenty of Bitcoin projects on the grid, but the grid projects aren't really, they've never been a focus. So we'll sell equipment into that market based on the, you know, the viability of the equipment itself, like the quality of the equipment. But we don't like heavily go after that. Like, as a company, we haven't heavily gone after the big mining companies because our specialty is off-grid. And in the off-grid area, you know, like over the last, I really started doing this in 2022, like after the first, or I wouldn't say my second bear market, but the first, call it proper company bear market. I started adding what I just broadly call like our oil field services stuff. So that's like building generators, rebuilding engines, building custom buildings. And in 2025, we started doing VFDs, like variable frequency drive packages. So really, like, we straddle both the Bitcoin mining space as it relates to the off-grid market, but we also straddle the oil and gas services space for anything related to power generation and like power distribution. So we don't do like enormous generators. We do these more cookie cutter, small modular generators that can be used for either Bitcoin mining or oil and gas power generation. Like, that's one way to put it in a nutshell.
I guess, I mean, you've done three bear markets, you said. What has changed business-wise? Like, where did you guys start out and what was sort of the learnings from the first and second time? Maybe what's different this time around? Talk about that for a bit.
Well, a lot has changed. I mean, in the first, so the, what I'll call the first bear market that we were operating in was end of 2017 peak, because my first year in business was 2017. So that bear market into like mid 2020, right? And that's when the China ban happened, and that's when the hash rate started migrating to North America. That was sort of like, call it our company discovery phase. So we were first to market in this off-grid oil field thing. So we didn't have any, like, especially back then, like in 2019, 2018, it was a one-man show. Like I designed everything with some help. I built everything with a lot of help, you know, contractors and stuff, and deployed it. So when I say discovery, I mean, like, it was figuring out the product, really, like just like the early iterations of the product. And, you know, those early days, like the kinds of products I was building back then, we don't build any of it anymore. So that we've iterated like many, many times. In that second bear market, you know, like say around that end of 2021 to 22 time frame or peak, down into like say 2024, that was more optimization of the product and starting to diversify, to add to our capabilities, not just serve the Bitcoin mining market. So in the same way, like, you know, for the listeners who pay attention to the mining market and see all the big Bitcoin mining companies like pivoting to AI, whereas a lot of our competition who like say sell containers or infrastructure, where they've pivoted to AI, we haven't. I don't like the term pivot. Like, we've added, because we haven't pivoted out of Bitcoin mining. It's still one of our number one focuses for off-grid, but we've added, call it adjacent capabilities. So building generator systems to power oil and gas wells, for example, and facilities, and the drives that I mentioned earlier, the VFDs to power pumps, to drive pumps. And that's that really represents, you know, like part of that is the market. I believe, you know, and I experienced this, the company experienced this in 2020. Bitcoin mining was horrible at the start of 2020 leading into the summer. And then the price started coming up and the China ban completely flipped that on its head. So by the end of 2020, we couldn't keep up with the orders. But what was interesting with us is also in 2020, for those that pay attention to oil and gas will remember that like the oil futures went negative in North America. The oil and gas prices, the future prices went negative. I had some Bitcoin mining clients talk to me about how they shipped oil to a processing battery, like a midstreamer, and had to pay the midstreamer to take the oil based on their contract terms. It was really, really crazy.
Especially in today's context.
Yeah, I know, like, it's something is sort of similar happening, but back in 2020, so given that, you know, we straddle this Bitcoin mining industry and the oil and gas, in the town that we manufacture in Canada, a town called Lloydminster, the entire industry in oil was like, it was dead. Like, people weren't building anything. Like, all the budgets got halted, a lot of layoffs, all that stuff. We were the most busy. We were easily the busiest company in town because that's when the Bitcoin market came up. And, which was nice. Like, having the two markets we serve, right? Like, we only really need one. Like, Bitcoin could go really terrible, like the Bitcoin mining market, for quite a while. And as long as I don't misallocate, you know, our resources, like, and get a bit of good luck along the way, like, we can take advantage of this growing oil and gas market. So it's almost similar to what guys are doing in the AI, where that are keeping the Bitcoin mining. Like, they have the Bitcoin mining maybe as a flexible load now, and the AI compute as a base load. But, you know, if Bitcoin rips again, you know, goes to where we all want it to go, like, you know, many hundreds of thousands, then Bitcoin mining will get exciting again for a lot of those grid players. And, some of them might get rewarded, right? Like, for sticking to keeping some of that business running.
Yeah. I mean, would you say that over the last bear markets that you've experienced, investing in Bitcoin mining in those times has historically been a good idea or a bad idea?
You know, of course, because no one can forecast out where, what the next, you know, because there was a period where everyone was subscribing to this, like practically everybody was subscribing to the idea of like a 4-year market cycle. And it feels like, you know, from what I see on social media, like less and less people believe that, you know, it's just going to pump every 4 years. Like it's sort of not, hasn't followed the projections. And so, yes, in the highest level, investing in capital equipment and Bitcoin mining equipment in the bear market is, of course, the best time to do it, because you'll get, you know, you'll get distressed assets that you can acquire, you know, especially on the mining computers. And we did see that in like 2021 or into 2020 and into 2021, when everyone had written off Antminer S9s as being dead, right? They came back with a fury. They were selling for $5 a pop in mid-2020. And then they started selling for up. I remember selling them for $700 a pop.
Wow.
Now, like, who did it? Did we go and invest in a bunch of S9s at the bottom of that market? Not really, but we did have some, right? Like we had them and we deployed them and sold them, and, you know. And so I don't know, like, it's always about what's the near term outlook. I always just run the company assuming, I try to assume like conservative numbers. Like I try to assume worst case scenarios, like budget for the worst case. And, you know, that might just mean we don't spend as much money on developing, say, our Bitcoin mining infrastructure capabilities. And then we don't get as much sales when it runs up. But it's also about just risk, you know, managing risk and not overspending. Yeah.
You mentioned risk, right? So this is exactly where I am a critic of this whole AI. I don't know. I don't want to call it pivot now, but you know what I mean, right? So oil and gas, it's never going to go away, right? This world needs oil, also needs gas. Bitcoin, also never going to go away. This AI thing, who knows? You know, it's super risky, I feel like. And I am not sure what the strategy looks like if all of these big miners who previously bought tens of thousands of ASICs are not buying them anymore. Bitcoin keeps doing what it's doing. And then what happens if we see hash price at 80, 90, 100? That competition in AI keeps compounding, keeps driving the price down. Like, is this maybe a bit short-sighted? You know, that's at least my theory. I mean, we've seen roughly, I think, 100 exahash or 150 exahash disappear from the network since October. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that trend reversing with the amount of used machinery that I see coming to the secondary market. And I think, like, your diversification or your what I hear is that you guys, as a result, started diversifying into a different revenue stream that's completely decoupled from Bitcoin. And I think that's really, right. Really smart. There is a question here. The question would be, like, first of all, feel free to comment. But my question would be, like, currently, do you see more demand from miners who soak up these cheap secondary market ASICs and want to deploy them on an oil and gas field? Do you see more demand for your infrastructure as a result of that? Or do people skimp out on expensive infrastructure if the miners that they're buying are worth very little? Buying Bitcoin miners should be simple, safe, and fast. Altair technology delivers exactly that. Based in the US and shipping directly from St. Louis, Altair eliminates all the shady messaging groups, customs and tariffs issues, and makes sure Bitcoin miners get to you on time. Altair stocks leading commercial ASIC miners, efficient home units, and all the critical parts you need, backed by real inventory, real support, and a team of people that you can rely on and actually mines Bitcoin. Thank you so much, Altair Technology, for supporting the show. And without further ado, let's get back to it.
I would say what we see less demand from I'm gonna just sort of frame this in a way that hopefully makes sense. So like, there's our products, like the Bitcoin mining products that we build. We design them with the end user being the oil and gas company in mind. Okay, so it's designed to be a solution for stranded gas in the highest sense. Now, historically, a lot of our business has been selling to third parties, like Bitcoin miners, who don't own oil and gas facilities. They buy the equipment, they contract with the oil and gas company direct. We would just sell them the equipment, they would put it on a contract that they have developed. We are seeing less inquiries from, I'll just call them the Bitcoin mining group, like the middlemen, the people that don't own the gas, and more inquiries from the people that own the gas. I think there's a few factors at play. It is a good time to invest in Bitcoin mining if you have the right application. And oil and gas applications, they're not all good applications. There's a lot of really, you know, a lot of people force the product and the systems that they put out there into bad applications. And there's been a lot of people bankrupted doing that. But for the right applications, it makes a lot of sense. And it's a great time to do it because you don't have to spend so much money on the computers. Because usually oil and gas, you do not need the newest computers. So you're not paying, if you're on the grid and you're stuck at this, like, you know, let's say you have a good power price, so anywhere from like 2 to 4 cents per kilowatt hour PPAs. Even at that level, at least especially towards the 4 cents, you're almost stuck going towards the newest hardware, right? It's like closer to the tip. So like an S21 XP or S23 when that's on the market. But then you pay the premium because you're competing with these guys, everyone else in the market that needs that newest stuff. So in my view, you're overpaying for the hardware and you're going to take a bigger hit on depreciation, right? Like as time elapses. With the oil and gas folks, though, you usually don't need to go to the top gen. You can go to like second and third gen. So like even S19s can make sense right now. If on the right projects. And in fact, a lot of the projects the oil companies buy our stuff for, those are good systems to start with. And then upgrade them later. You know, they pay themselves off very quickly because the gross operating cost is relatively low in the oil and gas space if you're doing it, like if you're smart about how you operate. Yeah, So we're sort of getting a drop in like these, call it just random third party inquiries, but more in the oil company self mining space.
Interesting.
And we probably do, you know, one thing we haven't really been doing for years is just because it's sort of not our business model. Like we're more of an infrastructure company. Like we quote and sell stuff and help service it. Like we support the client, but we don't really go out there and look for gas deals. And there's two reasons for that. Like one, I'm limiting our business to be like an oil field services business. We're not looking to be direct contractor for gas. And I don't want to compete with our customer base. Like our customer base is doing that. If it's not the oil company direct, the customers that are contracting for that gas, I'm not trying to compete with them on that. So there's elements there, I guess, that I consider as well.
What's your take sort of on the market? And do you think, again, with this whole, what happens if Bitcoin price goes up while hash rate goes down? Do you think there's enough demand in Canada, in North America in general, LATAM, and enough understanding of the market to sort of soak up all of those used units? Or do you see them sit and collect dust and go down in price until they reach their scrap value?
I do think a lot of the stuff, like if it stays in a ugly hat, like, I mean, long-term hash price is just going to keep going down, of course, because of chip efficiencies, right? Hardware gets more efficient, right? The more hash per joule. So like inevitably it's going to keep going down. It's always going to be what's the current, you know, spot price of the machines and, you know, the growth margins. I do think in any prolonged bear market, like we've been in, I considered it quite a long bear market that we're in general in Bitcoin. The computer pricing, you know, like is a lot of the computers are getting replaced, especially before the full pivot. It seems like almost everyone now in the public Bitcoin mining space has now pivoted or is leaning into the AI thing. But prior to that, there was a lot of upgrading, right? They were upgrading S19s, S21s, you know, like WatsMiner M30s, M50s, M60s to get their hash value down, like the cost per joule or cost per watt. And yeah, like I do think a lot of the secondary market it's going to have to find a home, like, you know, at the market's edge, you know, like oil field. I see we actually still get sort of steady, but it's really low volume, like low revenue. Like a lot of these small like solar projects that people might buy one of our black boxes for, and they're just filling it up with dirt cheap, like, you know, M30s or S19s. So they're getting in at a really cheap price just to utilize some small scale waste power they have, right? And so those are like, I call it, you know, those to be referred to as like, you know, edge cases, like market edge cases. Like they're not going to be like scalably massively by like one entity most likely. So, and really, I mean, really like Bitcoin, that's always been my personal thesis, is that Bitcoin belongs at the edge. And I've always been a little critical of like the big miners and their strategies of building these big brick and mortar facilities on grid for two reasons. Like one, a lot of them didn't build them to be portable. And now that AI is taking up, they sunk a lot of capital in these facilities that can't really be retrofitted for AI. And they've wasted a lot of money when they could have just liquidated the whole site and shipped it out if it was containerized.
Explain that, Steve. Why can it not be just upgraded to tier 3 or tier 4 from tier 1?
Well, I know, I don't want to say can't. I know there are some companies that have marketed that they can, like Core Scientific. Core, you got to give Core a lot of credit. They're very early to investing into this data center pivot. And they've always claimed that they designed their Bitcoin facilities to be dual compatible, but I haven't seen evidence of it yet. Like, you know, I know they've been already, I think they have stuff online with the AI now, but I haven't seen any evidence. Like they haven't shown how they took that existing Bitcoin mine and just took out the miners and put in the AI racks. And fundamentally there's like, if you design a site to do both, just like from mechanically, from like what has to go into the site, you're either overpaying. If it's being used as Bitcoin mining, you're either overpaying on the infrastructure to make it dual compatible. Or if if you don't get the AI going there, the HPC compute, then you just like way overpaid. Or they did the opposite, like they didn't make it dual compatible and now they have to gut the whole thing. I mean, some of the bones of some of these sites, you know, the land is, you know, not going to change if it can be dual compatible. Sometimes the buildings, like the buildings sell, they can be gut the internals of the building and redo it. I think now though, there are some companies, like when I think of some sites that I don't know if, as a matter of fact, if they're dual compatible, but like Hut 8's Vega site in Texas, like they built that as a hydro site with like server, you know, rack mount hydro mining. Mm-hmm. So that hydro will have a lot in common with, say, like hydro GPU compute. And so I'd imagine a lot of that infrastructure might be dual compatible. But I still would recommend, and who's my money, I would be building portable, like if you have a piece of land that you can put fiber into for the bandwidth needs and networking demands of AI, like build a portable Bitcoin mining stack, like transformers and containers, like just get a good quality product that's going to operate well and then get your AI stuff going, and then just move the Bitcoin load off, like when you need to, just sell it, remove it, put it on a new site. And there are companies, like, I think, that appear to me to be doing that strategy now. Like, I think Giga Energy might be trying to do that kind of strategy, because they'll build these, like, they're like a competitor to us in the sense, you know, we build similar Bitcoin mining systems, but, you know, they're going out and getting these, like, projects, like, maybe, I don't know what the sizes are, but like 10 plus megawatts, maybe 25 projects, getting it started with Bitcoin mining. And if I was them, you know, that and it has, like, if it's in a strategic location where you could get fiber and, like, have someone then come in and buy it up for AI compute, that's great. Now you can just move all that stuff you put down, and you really haven't lost a lot of money. Like, you haven't sunk a lot of capital.
I think I remember CleanSpark doing that. It's just sort of an anchor for that AI, right? So just to reiterate that,
yeah.
To understand your thoughts, right? So you bring Bitcoin mining somewhere, you secure all the energy, right? Because at the end of the day, that's what investors are interested in. They don't want energy in 5 years. They want, yeah, I don't know, 500 megawatts tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
And Bitcoin mining can secure that relatively easily and deploy it really, really fast. And so then when you have it and you can actually draw that power, because that's what the utility wants from you, right? They want you to then also please take that power, not just announce that you could potentially at some point. Then you make yourself a good friend that's also likely to give you a lot more power in the future, right? So in that sense, Bitcoin mining is anchoring that. And if you can do that with cheap machines, maybe even, I don't know, run at 80% uptime and shave off the peaks for the utility and get a really good deal. Like, there's a lot of things that can be done there. And I think that's also what the majority of these old units are going to be used for. But then I agree with you, like, why, if I was a shareholder in one of these big miners and they would be building tier 4 data centers and then be putting, I don't know, M50s in them, I'd be like, what are you doing? Like, that makes zero sense. What really stuck out to me from what you said earlier was also that you have a lot of these gas and oil companies reaching out to you. What do you think changed that? Like, do they reach out to you and ask about AI too? Can we just do AI on this oil field? What do you think changed from, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago that they now approach you for Bitcoin mining solutions on their oil fields?
I think in general, in the broadest sense, just because we're getting more bigger oil companies now than we were in the past too, like publicly traded ones. There's one right now we're working with in the US. They're pretty decent, well-known name, and they're self-mining Bitcoin. So they just did a pilot with us and are expanding it. I think one of the biggest things that stands is I do believe that whole, like, when the ETFs, you know, started, a lot of the institutes, I have a lot of, like, criticism towards some of the institutional adoption stuff that's been happening, I would give it a lot of credit on making it more palatable, right? Like, for other institutions, like other
putting
public
a suit
companies
on Bitcoin, dressing it. Yeah, in a suit.
The suit coiners have made it palatable for other suit coiners, and that definitely has an effect, because, you know, especially these bigger oil companies, who would come to us and we quote them. Now, a lot of the time they still want like a no capital option. Like, you know, we provide everything and they give us gas for free or something. And we won't do that. But the ones coming to us for quotes, often you'd get like a mid-level engineer who runs the numbers. He's like, this is the best solution for this facility. But then he gets stopped by legal or management, right? Like someone above him. I think that legal stop and all that, like, risk management side of it, and of course, like, there's been a lot more tools and, like, credibility even on the custody side, right? Like, you know, of course, Coinbase is, like, one of the suit favorites, not a favorite of mine, but a suit favorite. There's other companies like say that oil company we're working with, whose management actually approved, like, the call it mid-level engineers, project plans. They're an interesting group because they're actually using, like, they're not even using custodians. They're using like Unchained Capital for treasury management. So they're more hardcore, which is sort of surprising for a company the size that they are. Because usually we just see that with the smaller companies. But even I can tell you, like, when I started and had a lot of these small projects with a lot of small oil companies, now, given that there's more than just a custodian that they could use, like a Coinbase or a Kraken or, you know, whoever's the best in the jurisdiction is, now that they have like these multi-sig like partners, like OnRamp Bitcoin is a good group. I just met with them the other day. Unchained, of course. Yeah, they're great. Unchained, of course, has been around for a long time. They've helped pioneer that model. And that gives people a middle ground where you're not just giving it, you know, trusting the custodian, which for a lot of corporations are just fine with. But if they do want a little bit more self-control and, you know, not have risk on the custody side, like they can use like those, you know, Unchained and the like. So
I just
been a lot of infrastructure. Yeah.
Yeah, go on. I was just saying, I just had the guys from Sangha Renewables on as well. And they're also working with Total Energies, which is a giant in the energy space. You know, the NGs of the world, they announced that they're doing something in Brazil. Like, and do you think maybe, I don't know if this is a bit reaching too far, but I feel like the story or the public image of oil and gas companies over the last 10 years has not been the greatest, right? So do you think that that fact coupled with, hey, we might as well associate ourselves with Bitcoin now, you know, can't get much worse. Is that a factor or not?
No, I don't think so. I mean, of course, oil and gas companies have been shown as, you know, considered a negative, like in from a marketing and like news level, you know, view for quite a long time. Of course, with the oil prices going up due to some like, you know, Middle East drama, people are remembering how important oil is, and at least, you know, anyone rational about it understands that, you know, you can't really do anything without crude oil and that, especially crude oil and its byproducts. But I wouldn't say there's a huge element of like oil companies being like, you know, they've been demonized for so long and let's, you know, like Bitcoin's not going to make it that much worse. You know, they're actually pretty, you probably actually won't find a higher concentration of environmentalists in any other industry than oil and gas, because they all have, especially with all the scrutiny in North America, especially and in Europe, for like the, you know, Northern European companies, like they actually invest a lot in environmental remediation and they employ a lot of environmental professionals.
So I have to get their numbers straight. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, like, oil and gas folks see Bitcoin mining, like, the ones that are thinking about it correctly, like, they see it as a, not just, like, an economic win versus some alternative. Like, you know, flaring gas, of course, you don't have a payout. Like, you never make any money. But even though not every flare is the right spot to put a Bitcoin mine, it's pretty much irrefutable at this point that it's still a better thing for emissions, putting it through an engine than through a flare. And it's generally more responsible, right? Like you're monetizing the energy and you're basically creating jobs. You might not even create a lot of jobs in the oil company, like operations or maintenance, but you're upstream of that. Like my company, you're creating jobs buying it. And anything that generates a royalty, like in the cases where the gas being used is generating royalty versus not because it's being flared or it's sitting in the ground, you're paying into that's going to the local government and it's building hospitals and road maintenance and all that stuff. So that is like well understood, like, you know, in the oil industry. And it's not without its challenges to like succeed at doing it, but it is, and, you know, and that's also why I've always advocated, you know, even when we were talking about the grid stuff, like whether you're on the grid or off the grid, the Bitcoin mining infrastructure should always be portable, because it's the only technology that can scale and be just moved wherever the energy is. It just has almost no, you don't need contracts because you have the global network buying the hash rate. You don't need high internet. You can just use a cell modem, even on a gigawatt mine, you can use a cell modem. If you're using like proxies and local internet, you know, proxies to minimize what's going out to the internet. So it's just like unbelievably awesome that way. And that's why I think everyone who's invested in the portable infrastructure, whether you're on grid or off grid, it's really the only way to do it.
This episode is sponsored by Hashbranch, the easiest way to mine Bitcoin in the US. Sourcing hardware and rack space usually is a mess. Bad deal structures, misaligned incentives, and no visibility after deployment. I have placed tens of thousands of ASICs in partnership with Hashbranch. What I like most is that they cut through the noise. Fair pricing, aligned terms, and access to hosting that actually works. Use code HASHRATEUP100, visit hashbranch.com today to get $100 off of each miner that you order.
Yeah, I'm in two fields, because you said like it needs to be portable, but then in a lot of jurisdictions you have to have a certain size to even qualify for the power contracts. Like if you take, I don't know, power at medium voltage, you know, you're not gonna get a 1 megawatt contract. And a lot of miners in Ethiopia are feeling the pain of not really being movable right now. Because once you make all of those investments, you know, that's sunk costs and you can't just move away from it on a dime. So that there is that. But I do agree with you that those miners who remain flexible and who can move and ship the machines elsewhere, that's a big advantage to have, because it's diversifying your risk 100%. Steve, I want to talk to you about the VFDs. I want to understand that more for maybe another 5 minutes, and then we'll do a quick rapid fire and then round up. Cool?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So tell me those VFDs that you mentioned. Explain to my audience, please, what those are and why they're important and why you guys are selling them, focusing on them.
Yeah, they're part of the, so I'll just, yeah, my background personally is oil and gas production. So oil and gas production facilities and optimization. That's what I was doing before Bitcoin. That's what I started doing in this company. So when I started Upstream Data, almost everything we build for off-grid has a packaged genset, like a natural gas generator in it. So like our Bitcoin mining product might have it in the building with the Bitcoin mine, or it might be separate depending on the scope of the project. When I started wanting to, because even though I'm straddling the two industries, like I said, all the people I have in the company are building both. So it's not like we have two different divisions. It's the same like company doing the same stuff. We just shift the work to whichever is in demand. So all the machines we have, like manufacturing machines, all the people, they're completely liquid on both markets. So when I started adding to the oil field services side to get that market, which in hindsight, I think I was pretty smart because the oil price is going up and our business is going up with that. It started with generators. So instead of just making a dedicated generator with a Bitcoin mine, we started just making dedicated generators and selling those. We do buildings for Bitcoin mines. Now we do custom buildings for oil and gas companies that have nothing to do with even generators. Just like we just built a 30-foot building for an oil storage. Like they're just putting oil, like a bunch of field maintenance components, like oil drums and stuff in the building. So I got into VFDs because generally in the oil and gas industry, as it is in many, the end user doesn't want to piece out every component from different suppliers. They want someone to package everything, like, and serve it to them on a silver platter, right? So people that, so say oil and gas operators who are interested in our generators, because they're going to set up a well site with electric pumps and they need VFDs, it's a lot easier for us to get their business if we do the full meal deal right up to the pump. Now, because I'm Canadian-based, I'm Canadian and sitting in Calgary, the oil and gas industry is extremely broad. We're not trying to tackle every basin. What I'm doing with the oil and gas right now is all Canada, and it's all heavy oil production. So anyone basically buying anything to drive artificial lift pumps, so ESPs for high volume oil and gas production, or like PCPs or pump jacks for low volume production, if we want to like get on their bids and get VFD sales or generator sales, the more we can offer them like as a full package, like the better. So we're already selling like these VFDs that are a little small, just small modular VFD panels. Like they're only like 3 foot wide, you know, 4 foot tall, that just sit on the stand. It's a very commodity business, low margin. We're also doing like the more integrated building systems, like the MCC buildings. We're just sort of starting that. But between the generator packages, the MCC packages, the VFDs, whether they're modular or not, it's sort of like I'm trying to build a full meal deal around oil and gas production. And I say production, I don't mean processing or midstream. We're going after the upstream oil and gas industry, and that, because that's also where Bitcoin mining fits. It doesn't really fit downstream so much. Just like on the grid, you're downstream from the energy source, and that's why they're getting priced out. It's like, you know, the Bitcoin mining stuff we do can go right to the wellhead. The generators that power the wellhead, or it can actually do both. We can build a generator that powers the well site and a Bitcoin load. You know what I mean? So if you just think of the stack, it's like they have the gas. We provide the generator, the buildings and enclosures for it, everything power distribution, like low voltage switchgear and VFDs. We won't be supplying pumps because that's getting into artificial lift. That's like downhole stuff, and we're surface power. But we're basically doing everything now on the surface, like everything from the gas to convert it to power, to drive the well sites and mine Bitcoin, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so it all comes, I mean, how important, just briefly follow-up question, how important do you think it is that it all comes out of one hand and kind of has the chance to speak to each other? Because I understand the Bitcoin mining load is flexible. You have to control that somehow. You have to adjust it according to how much power is available at any given second. And I'm guessing that if you just piece different manufacturer parts together, that there's a lot of friction, and the advantage here would be for you guys to supply all of that as a package that is designed to do that specific thing.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of, you know, the companies that are really successful in oil field services are the ones that have great services, so they can support the product. So like they, you know, one issue with, and I had this issue early with upstream data, like, you know, when I was buying generators instead of building them ourselves, and then a customer had a problem, I'd have to work through this, my supplier, to troubleshoot, and let's say it was a warranty request, to deal with that. It's absolute nightmare. It's the same thing in oil and gas. There's going to be problems eventually, like, you know, whether it's a quality problem out of our shop or an application problem, how it was operated, there's going to be something. So, you know, when I started the VFD thing, the first thing I did was hire a VFD expert. Mm. Like he's like one of the best in Canada, because we can't support a VFD product without someone like him. And, you know, I hired other folks to train under him, right? So part of it is like the full meal deal. They want the package. They want the full bid. But the other thing is like being able to support the client. We also do We build a lot of stuff under subcontract now. So like a lot of the buildings we build and even the VFD modular packages we're doing, they're actually not direct to customers. They're through a packager like Schlumberger. Schlumberger buys a lot of our buildings. They just started buying some of our VFDs. So we'll support them. They'll support their customer, basically. And that's sort of a nice thing for us because we don't have the, we're not spread out. You know, I don't have a service shop in every basin, like oil and gas production basin. I mean, it's on the roadmap, but like, you know, it's probably a lot longer. It's going to take me longer than I want. You know, that's just the way things happen. But we have two manufacturing facilities now, one in Canada, one in the U.S. The U.S. one isn't going to touch oil and gas yet. They're focused on Bitcoin mining, like hash generators, because a lot of it there is also training, learning how to build these systems. And then when they're like optimized, then I'll start adding, branching out there like I did in Canada. Because Canada, we're a lot more robust as a company. We were spread out into oil and Bitcoin and, you know, a few different like product lines. I'll do the same thing in the US once like we have more of a foothold, if you know what I mean, with personnel and the capabilities.
How unconceivable or conceivable is it for you guys to start building your own miner?
Oh, like the actual hardware?
Yeah. I mean, it would be, I know ASIC and chip level design and shit is super difficult, but all of these machines that come to market are designed for always on use at some point in time.
Yeah.
And then we use them in a way that they're not designed. So I'm just waiting for that application where people say, hey, you know, we have this specific use case. That's one we want to build an ASIC for.
Yeah, I mean, there's the way I look at things is like you only build in house, right? What's the thing? You buy from your neighbor. If your neighbor does it cheaper than you, you buy it from your neighbor, right? So like, I can't remember what the actual saying is, but you don't build in house what your neighbor can sell to you cheaper, right? You just contract it out. So in our stack, right, say in a generator package, we have a lot of really competent, good engine people, like really technical, really hands-on. They understand how to troubleshoot engines, especially natural gas engines. And it's sort of a rare skill. Like it's not as common as like an automotive engine, right? Because, you know, you're dealing with variable fuels and conditions. I'm more thinking rather than like integrate in-house the ASICs, like would we invest in that? Like, would we hire the right people to develop that? Or would I hire the right people to develop engines? You know, cause we don't build the engine in-house. We buy it from a packager like PSI out of Chicago or Mesa out of Casper, Wyoming. Will we do that instead of buying it from them? Maybe in the future, if there was a point in time where it was better for us to take that in-house than to rely on their product, right? So to answer your question more like concisely, there's no plan to do ASIC design and supply. I'll give you one example that the way I think about it is, say, who's it, Bitdeer, right? Bitdeer has developed their own, you know, former Jihan Wu, former Bitmain. You know, they know that business. They've started that business. Like they have the seal miner. At least by all reports, they don't sell very many externally. And they're using them in-house.
Not according to plan, but yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's also market driven. Like no one's selling a lot right now. Like Bitmain, MicroBT, Canaan. You know, I don't think they're doing great on new hardware sales. So yes, there's an element of that that's affected, say, Bitdeer's plans. But if you were building something that you can sell to the public, but you're only using it in-house, that's a very bad sign for when I look at an infrastructure company, because you can't price it to sell. You have to use it yourself. Because if you build something for yourself, you should be able to put a price on it That's better to just sell it and return your investment and do more stuff. That's going back to that thing I bought on that saying, like, don't build in house, but your neighbor will do better.
Yeah.
At lower cost.
For them, it's optionality, right?
Yes.
But they're also selling a lot of their used machines to make space for AI and for their own seal miners. But yeah, anyway, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I mean, I know what you mean. And you're right. The option, it's sort of like, you know, we build half generators with, and then people put those machines in our buildings. We will put our own half generators to work on different contracts with oil companies. It's not how we're scaling our business. We do that as a trial basis. You know, I talked about not wanting to compete with our customers as well. But just to be blunt, there's more money and a faster return on investment for us to sell the equipment. And if we can't sell it because the market is shitty, then we'll have more reason to use it in-house, like to just go direct and do deals. But as soon as the market corrects, like the objective is to get the max value out of, you know, the productivity of the company. And that's always selling externally, generally.
Yeah. Makes sense, Steve. Yeah. We're already way over time. Let's do a quick round of rapid fire. You ready?
All right. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, cool. Number one, flare gas or grid power? Which one has more upside?
Going into the future, flare gas for sure.
Coldest temperature you've ever deployed a hash generator in?
Northern Alberta, sort of like north of Edmonton. It gets to -55°C.
And the hottest?
West Texas.
Has Bitcoin mining ever been harder than right now?
From a unit profitability, no. From an infrastructure supply chain stack, it's pretty good right now.
Are any oil companies Bitcoiners yet?
Yes, we have many, many customers that are. Yeah.
One thing every miner should know about running in a remote location.
Have professional help. If you don't know how to maintain an engine, make sure you find someone that does, because you're going to fail miserably.
Loved it. I have to commend you. You've been able to answer these questions the quickest out of all my guests so far. Do you want to give people a quick handoff on where to find more about your company in Canada, your company in the US, socials, all of that good stuff?
Yeah, I mean, Upstream Data is the company name. We're in Wyoming, manufacturing in Alberta. And if you want to reach me, X is probably best. I ignore LinkedIn. It's full of trash. So, at SG Barber on X.
Awesome. Steve, you've been a great guest to interview. I hope we do this again. I know you're a wealth of knowledge. Thanks again for coming on, spending some time that I know is scarce for you. So yeah, appreciate it very much. And hope to see you soon. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, Jesse.
All right. Bye. Cheers.